This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is May 27th, 1981. The interview is taking place in Mortvedt Library at Pacific Lutheran University and is being conducted by Maureen Nesvig. This is a special interview with Mr. Trygve Nakkerud, who is the president of the Leif Erikson League. Mr. Nakkerud, can you tell us a little bit about the Leif Erikson League? For example, when was it founded?
The Leif Erikson League Incorporated was actually founded in 1955. However, it had operated under different names, clear from the later part of 1800, like the Leif Erikson's friendship organization, mm-hmm. Leif Erikson, different names.
Do you know some of the other names?
The Leif Erikson Festival Committee, that was the one just before we made it into the league.
Now, where was it founded then in the 1800s? Where did it get its original start, do you know?
Well, the Northwest Organization, or the Seattle Area Organization, were founded, of course, in Seattle or along the Pacific Coast, mm-hmm. with Tacoma and Olympia and Seattle, but they also had, as you know, 140 Leif Erikson organizations throughout the United States and Canada. But to write them and get the information is rather complicated, because you have an address, you send it, and you get the letter back because they have moved. And that's why we appreciate very much that the Pacific Lutheran would be the national headquarters.
So how are you affiliated with Pacific Lutheran University then? This is your headquarters?
For the ones that so far have applied or sent their information and addresses here.
So all of the various chapters throughout the country go through Pacific Lutheran University? Is that what you're aiming for?
We are aiming for that, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it would be to your benefit, their benefit, and everybody's benefit. Forget the real facts and everything, so we have it.
Now, what are your activities in Seattle with your chapter? Do you think you have the most active group in the country?
Oh, I wouldn't say that, but we are one of the active groups. I definitely would say that, but the funny part, in Los Angeles, they had a very good group when we applied for October 9th as a permanent Leif Erikson day. Now when I write to them, it seems like they have moved, the letters comes back and back, and this is the thing we're trying to avoid by getting a headquarters.
I see. So you feel you need some unity to bring all of your... So there is no one... Some of the groups exist around the country without knowing about the others. Is that correct? They're scattered.
You're right.
How did that come about? They're all independent, it sounds.
Well, I imagine it came about because they got their education about Leif Erikson in the old country. And as immigrants coming over here, they heard about some other names like Columbus and so on. They thought, why don't we tell the people the truth? Mm-hmm. So they started organizations all over. And as you maybe know, as far as Leif Erikson statues, there's several of them also in this country, and there's Leif Erikson highways and freeways and parks and so on throughout the United States and Canada.
So Leif Erikson has been an important symbol for the Norwegian people.
For the Norwegian people are interested in the truth.
Well, why don't you go back then? Why don't we get a little bit of background about Leif Erikson himself? Can you tell me a little bit of the history of the man, when he lived, where he lived, and why he's important?
Well, he was a son of Erik the Red, and Erik the Red's wife, and Erik the Red, I am sure you know something of the history of, was an unusual, at that time, called king. He was both the king, the executive office, the prosecuting office, and everything were in the power of the kings them days. And to prove who was right or wrong, They went in the backyard as a rule and settled it by a duel with swords. And he was too quick and too good, so the neighbors felt that they better get him out of the country, so they told him to leave Norway. He went to Faroe Island, where he didn't like it too well, and then from there he had heard of Iceland, and he sailed there. Now there's quite a interesting story about Leif Erikson, that's the one you asked about. Where was he born? On the ship to Iceland? I doubt he was born in shore in Iceland, because coming to a new country, I doubt the mother will say, let me get in shore, I'm going to have a baby. She would much rather stay on the ship where he had heat, water, and clothes and everything. But that's a small side issue.
He About what year would this be? What do they approximate the date?
I need my book to look up the exact date. I can't remember that.
Before the year 1000, because after
yes,
all,
it was in
1890.
I'm just interested in an approximate date now.
Somewhere between 950.
Around 950.
I would think.
Mm-hmm. He was born, according to what we have found out, in the year 968. Then, being he were a good sailor, and naturally having an active, athletic dad, like no question Erik the Red were, mm-hmm. he taught him a lot of things. So when he was just a young boy, he gave him the ship and several men, mm-hmm. and told him where Norway were, and he sailed over there, and he landed with King Olaf Tryggvason, which was in the family with his family, and he stayed there with them for a whole year, the winter, and he, Olaf Tryggvason, christened him as a Christian. So when he left, he had a cross on his chest, as is a very typical still to this day.
Leif Erikson had a cross.
He was given that by Olaf Tryggvason.
He had become a Christian.
And anywhere where he went then, he was a Christian, the people that were in shore. Mm-hmm. And of course, when he left Norway, he sailed for Iceland. And when he got there, he wanted to he's dead alone, and they also had then by that time discovered Greenland. Mm-hmm. They called it Greenland because it was some green spots and for sales purposes to get people to be interested to travel there. Leif Erikson, according to the history, got priest Tangbrand, T-A-N. Gbrand to travel with them on these trips to Christian the rest of the world. And the trip in over then today United States, mm-hmm. and as they call Vineland, both to find new land and to christen the people. Mm-hmm. And then you ask why he was such an important person. He was able to talk and deal with even the natives that were in this country then, the Indians, Eskimos. He was able to talk and deal with them in such a friendly way that the chief of the natives, when they came and he says, this people on this ship, they told me to do so and so, mm-hmm. then the chief will say, if the squarehead told you that, mm-hmm. you can be sure it'd be all right. That's a rather interesting thing, because a lot of people don't realize where the word squarehead come in at, but they came from being honest and square on the level.
And the Indians called Leif Erikson the squarehead.
Yeah, that's where they start. That's as far as we know, the start of the squarehead. You know, they used the sign language rather than written, you know. Mm-hmm. So It'd be natural if you were square, I'd make it, oh yeah, she's square. So and so on. All this, to me, has been very interesting. And I have, with the league members, gotten a lot of information from them and read it in books and so on. Well, anyway, being Leif Erikson were so unusual negotiate with people, he decided that he better load up the ship and go back and to Greenland and Iceland and tell the rest of what a wonderful land he had found.
Mm-hmm.
And they organized a group of over 30 or 33 ships, which at them days mostly had 20, 30, and 40 people aboard, plus animals, cattle, sheep, and so on.
What types of ships were those? Were those what we consider the traditional Viking ships?
Yeah.
And how were they powered?
By a sail.
Mm-hmm.
And you, beside being a discoverer of land, you had to know to take advantage of the wind,
mm-hmm.
and also handle the storms, because you can be sure with the open sailing ships that they had in the long voyages, they had to run into the storms as they had them days, as they have here today. But then he organized all this and went back. He also found that all of his Scandinavian or emigrants, as he got to travel over to United, to today called United States or Vinland,
mm-hmm.
they wasn't all squareheads. And when the Indians or natives found that out, they started to fight. And Leif Erikson then decided to travel back to Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
And he established here his settlement there, and he lived there till he died. So you ask why we think he is so great, because he done everything honest and great and square.
There was some trouble, though, when he brought the other group of people from Norway, the larger group.
Well, yes, but now you can't exactly blame it on the group that came in, that they were troublemakers or that he wasn't squareheads.
Mm-hmm.
They could be that the natives that were here figured that this is our land, why should somebody else come in and move in on us?
Yes.
So that is your way, my way, and the right way to figure that one out.
Now, all of these facts that you have just related, is there documentation, is this really historical fact? Are there records somewhere to show that this happened?
Oh, yes, there's definite records of both houses they built, which, of course, in the later years has been proven by grants of Norway to Engstad. He went over with his wife, and they put in a lot of time and work.
This is a scientist named Engstad?
Yes, scientist Engstad and his wife. So they, however, it's rather quite a coincidence that was sent. He was sent over to prove all this after all these organizations in the United States of Canada had celebrated the Leif Erikson settlement or discovery of this country for years previous.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew about it, but as you just asked, something to really prove it to the others. That's why I imagine Engstad got the grant from Norway to go over and do what he did. And he done a good job.
Now,
he and his wife.
You say that the Norwegian people, though, they knew this all along. I mean, this has been passed down.
Oh, sure.
How is it that they knew about it? Is this something that is studied as... Do school children in Norway study about Leif Erikson the way, say, others might study Christopher Columbus?
Yes, it's part of the school program in Norway that you have to learn what the history is all about. However, that is a kind of interesting point after Columbus. First, I better say that Leif Erikson history and facts disappeared to a certain extent in other European countries after we had the Black Plague, like into some of the northern cities of Norway, where they had 50, 60,000 people. After the plague had gone through that city, there was only 5 or 10,000 people left. So, and the ships that came from the south, where the plague most likely came from, when they were tied up with the docks of certain cities, like in Bergen, laid there to the rotted and sunk. And of course, whom after whom were burned and destroyed because they figured there was poison in it. But they finally got it cleaned out. Well, then that, of course, was a setback to the Leif Erikson situation, which were, he discovered it in the year 1000, maybe a year before and 1 year later. However, the plague hit in year 1300, or thereabout. And that again then, as I say, quite, there was no necessity for people in Europe to rush somewhere else for more land, being
it wasn't crowded anymore.
No, the plague took care of that. Or so.
So do you, is that one reason? Do you think Leif Erikson and Erik the Red did they venture out to the northern islands because it was getting populous in Norway, or were they just purely adventurers?
They were inventors, but as I already said to start with, the main reason that Erik the Red left Norway were that he was too much of an athlete and had too much, all the power rested in, you may call him the big farmer or the king. They call him kings if you own so much land. And being quick with the sword, when the duel came, he won the right long. He never lost. So such then the neighbors went together and they said, there is a two Danish men for us. He is right in a lot of things he does, but he's too quick with that sword when you come to a duel, so we don't know what's going to take him. So we, so the you may, as using the American word, they ganged up on him and made him move.
I see.
But they helped him to load their cattle, load all his belongings on the ships. So you may say it was in a friendly way they made him leave.
You say this Vineland was the section of what is now the United States. Do you know where that would be, this Vineland? Is that the state of Maine, or is that, is it actually part of the United States now?
Canada and United States, yeah.
Did their settlements come down as far as what is now the United States?
They were down, yes, to what's now the United States.
And do you know why they called it Vineland?
Well, there, of course, it's several different theories on that, but they did have on with them a monk or a slave, you know, the Vikings went down south of Europe. And there he picked up sometimes somebody that voluntarily wanted to travel with them, or sometimes by force. This one evidently wanted to travel with the Norwegians voluntarily. And he, coming from the southern part of Europe, knew all about making wine and everything. So when he landed, he disappeared one night. And against the rule of Leif Erikson, because he had given him order to every night that he should have the tally or a check on how over there, and this one party didn't show up. Well, the next day he came, and he had quite a bit grapevine with him, and he said, I know how to make good wine of this, and he said, go ahead. So this is facts,
yes,
written down. Well, now then, it's others that come with this argument that they had to have an axe with them and cut down the vines of trees and things to could get through. That I don't believe, because there wasn't much wine then or now on the places they landed on the East Coast.
But they must have found some vines, some grapes.
Oh, well,
there.
Yes, well, he even got...
Vine. V-I-N, that is wine in Norwegian.
So it really means wine land. Was the settlement Wineland?
Yeah, fine, yeah. So, but as I say, we in the league always try to avoid getting into the argument about details like that,
yes,
because we know they were here, and sometimes in the meeting get dull. You have to bring some interesting things like that up for discussion. But just the same, we don't use that for the main thing of the discovery of America. The main thing is that he did sail here, he did land here on three different places. He did go back over to Greenland and settle there. And his mother, by the way, was a secretary with the Leif Erikson League. Today it is Mrs. Emma Warney that's the secretary. But you got to have a good secretary to get things done, and Leif understood that, so he had his mother, and she again sent all of their records, even from them days, down to the Pope of Rome. And Senator Warren G. Magnuson told me once that when he was in Rome, he went over and he looked at the records. And of course, this other party we mentioned, I came here after they got crowded in Europe. And they needed new land, Columbus, when his son went through the records in Rome, he found that his dad had gotten a lot of the information from the record as Leif Erikson's mother had sent.
So why do you think she would have sent a record down to Rome?
Oh, because Tengbrandt was a Christian under the Roman religion. You see, they didn't, you know, it was quite a bit later that we had Martin Luther came in with the Norwegian Lutheran Church. So
it was a religious empire type.
Yeah, you may call it that, yes.
Yes. Okay, so before we go on now to talk about the work of your league, and since you have stressed that the most important thing is that Leif Erikson was here, you know that. One quick note, which part of Norway was he from? Do you know, was that northern Norway?
Well,
from which you said?
I already have said that they call it kingdoms, the big farms. So Erik the Red had a kingdom of Norway, which were on the southeastern part of Norway. But now Olav Tryggvason, the Christian, the whole Norway, he is at that time headquartered were in Trondheim.
Mm-hmm.
So when Leif Erikson came back to Norway, he went to Trondheim, mm-hmm. where he unloaded the ivory tusks he had found in Greenland and Iceland and furs and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So he brought a tremendous wealth with them. Them things was very valuable to the, them days as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So by being being a relation with Olav Tryggvason, Leif Erikson also brought enough value with him that any king will say, you're welcome, come here. And according to all the books I read, they had a wonderful time because Leif Erikson also were very athletic.
Mm-hmm.
He could, I was talking about that mostly the ships them days were powered by sail, but they also had oars. And one of the things that proved you were a good athlete them days were that when you were rowing these big heavy ships, if you could run and dance on the oars as they were rowing, that was a good sign, without falling in the water, that was a good sign you were a good athlete, and they very often could do that. Together with also others. That was a common sport.
What have been some of your activities? Now, you want to get Leif Erikson Day recognized. Is that your goal?
We got that already done.
Okay, how was that done? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, first we worked on in the Northwest here. We worked on to get money enough together so we could build a Leif Erikson statue. And we had quite a time to find someone that we thought could be the sculptor to help us with that.
When did you start that activity?
That was back in 1955, 56, 57. We actually got that going that we should get the money. Well, then when we got the money...
And how did you raise money?
Oh, by donation, by bazaars, by...
Was this mostly from the Scandinavian community in Seattle?
Yeah. The Leif Erikson plate as we now have to raise money to keep it going, keep the organization going. There you'll find the five Scandinavian flags, or we call it Scandinavian flags. They doesn't exactly belong to the Scandinavian half island, but there's Scandinavian people on them. and American flag there. We got that made, and we are getting donation for that now to keep the organization going. And we always had something like that to keep going.
Okay.
Mainly the bazaars, that helped us quite a bit.
So you raised money for the statue?
For a statue. Then when we got that finished and established in a good place in Shilsha Bay Marina, Seattle, then the next were that we thought we better do something to get more people know all over the country. So we spent a lot of money to write to Washington, D.C., to the Postal Department, and to get the commemorative stamp.
You wrote to the Postal Department.
Postal Department, that was in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever tried to get a stamp through for anything?
No, why don't you tell about what kind of process that is?
Oh, it's tremendous. It's no question about it. It's a political angle, and being Scandinavian, they are in minority compared to Italians, Spaniards, and Greeks and so on in this country. Then that is also so in Washington, D.C. in Congress. So we finally got so far that the true Senator Henry M. Jackson and Magnuson and several other Scandinavian senators in Washington, they got so far that they got it on the floor. To do this, the southern ancestor senators were right there, right away, because up to then, Leif Erikson Day had to be proclaimed as a national holiday year by year. So they says, okay, we'll go along with this to have Leif Erikson proclaimed by the president yearly if we can get Christopher Columbus proclaimed as an annual day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they got October the 12th as an annual day for Columbus. And of course, being most of the printing presses and things also is owned by southern people from Europe, on the press, you will find that it's October the 12th marked, very seldom Leif Erikson, except that the one that ordered the calendar request October the 9th, and the Scandinavians that own the printing press and do it. So that went on then to be. Thought that was too senators made too much of a deal, and we wrote letters pretty strongly to them that if we known you were going to make that kind of deal, we were going a different way about this. But we had to accept what they had done. So then the next war, a lot of letter writing to get October the 9th as a permanent day, and President Lyndon Johnson, being Kennedy previous before him. Assassinated, promised that he would go through and make October 9th the permanent day. He said, because that, according to what he had read, he was a well-read person, Kennedy were. So I guess most senators and presidents are. I hope they are. So he agreed that they should. So Lyndon Johnson actually was the one that said they were going to be done, but he didn't do what proclaimed October the 9th as a permanent Leif Erikson Day.
Okay, so right now, October the 9th is a holiday or a permanent special day from year
right.
to year, and it's been proclaimed
by
on the national level as Leif Erikson Day.
By a former United States president.
Why is it October the 9th? Why that day?
Well, the first Scandinavians that came from Europe came over in this ship with only 52 persons aboard and landed in New York. They landed in New York October the 9th. And they took that day more by having something to base it on. That's a good day.
Yeah, as good as any other day.
And an interesting point of it is this several days ahead of October the 12th. So that fits also that Leif Erikson comes before Columbus, you see.
I see, because Columbus Day has been October 12th.
Right.
So So that worked out. Now, when did you get your stamp through? That went through
1968.
In 68. Now, this group that was sending letters back and promoting the stamp and the national holiday, was this the Seattle group? Were you supported by other groups around the country on this?
The letters you have in your file here of the book where the secretary of the organization in Los Angeles wrote to me and asked to get the information how about to go about all this to get it a national holiday. I sent all the information I could, plus a few dollars, which is usual take. I didn't know how big organization they could get together down there in a hurry. Suggested in the letter that they go ahead and be the head organization to get October 9th through. I didn't discuss that too much with the league member. We didn't call the league meeting for it. Maybe I should have done that and gotten everybody's viewpoint, but my point was that if we built the got the Leverickson statue erected, then got the postage stamp through, and then also pressed and got October 9th through, this Southern Senators, they said, hey, you see, this just that CL group that we're pushing for this here. Mm-hmm. So by getting those Anglis very interested in it, and they took on and done a tremendous job down there. And I'm real sorry that so far the letters I've been sending is lost, but I'll find somebody down there, and you in your file here now, you have that letter as I sent back to the secretary and suggested this, and of course she called me back and says, don't you think you're going overboard for helping us too much for that? So I said, no, I said, I have a reason for it. So now you tell me if I've done wrong or right.
So you wanted to get more parts of the country involved in this so that it would be a national support for Leif Erikson.
You agree, don't you?
Yes.
Sister Secretary, agree that that was the right thing?
Most certainly.
Thank you. Thank you to both of you.
Gerald Ford made the proclamation, and when did he make that proclamation? Which year did you finally, remember which year it was that you got your national holiday?
That was when we had the
76.
When we had the
76.
Yeah, when we had the I didn't write them things down.
After all, it was tape is off. Was it 76 or 75? Because Jimmy Carter was elected in 76, and
Gerald Ford wasn't president too long. So
no, he was only president to see what a year.
Yes.
Wait a minute. How long was he a president?
Well, anyway, it's not that important.
No,
but we just want to get during Gerald Ford's presidency.
During Gerald Ford, and he was president for less than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, August. He was president 15 months, from August of 74 till Carter was elected in November of 76.
Right.
So it was less than a 2 year period.
Yes.
And the reason that I know that it was August 1974 was because Nixon abdicated on August the 9th. And the reason I remember that was my
birthday. Do you have
birthday.
That full book as we give of records back here, or is it on the other?
And I remember calling my brother and saying, well,
I appreciate that we get that date.
The change has been made, and there are no tanks on my street.
Right.
And it was on my mother's birthday. So.
Are both Warren Magnuson and Henry Jackson of Scandinavian descent?
Absolutely sure about yes, you both say they are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think that helped you in your cause?
Oh, yes. It takes a mother in the house to say my children is always right. So that'd be the same in this case. It takes the blood, saying his blood is thicker than water.
So do you have what are your future goals for the Leif Erikson League now? What would you like to accomplish in the future?
Keep on having the October 9th celebrated and get the officers in the deed to take over. They'll have it enjoyable, nice doing. By flying the flag, American flags on it, but you haven't got it on, have you?
How do you celebrate October the 9th in Seattle?
Well,
with
us at all, the governor, the mayor, the president send proclamations that the American flag should be flying on schools and official buildings, and we ourselves, we get together, have a good dinner, and good program of good speakers that will tell the history of as well as they know it. And from this Pacific Lutheran University, we have had some of the best speakers on the coast there, but we also have had both Magnuson and Yaxton speaking to us in the past. And of course, them two, both of them had looked up the records and gave us real good. Thanks.
How many members do you have in your Seattle League?
Well, right now we
approximately.
Well, you see, the league is an organization representing other organizations, and as you can see here, I think you'll find this 18 organization. Well, I remember at one time that when we sent to when we sent the letter down to Los Angeles when they started. The organization forget October 9th as a permanent day, that there was a letter written that there were 22,000 members back of all this organization, but in the league, this, as you see there, mm-hmm. this two delegates with the idea that each one had two substitutes. And another unusual thing about this delegates here is that if anyone decide that this you're going to leave the country or get sickly or for other reasons can't be active anymore, mm-hmm. it's up to them to find another delegate to take the place. It isn't up to us to, when he wants to accept as part of the pleasure of being a delegate or burden, if I should put it that way.
So the Leif Erikson League is really like an umbrella group, and you have many Scandinavian organizations
right.
that send delegates who are members then of your league. So
right.
the league covers over many Scandinavian groups.
And
is
back
that correct?
To this plate now again, as you have, with the different national flags, indicates that they were representative of all them different countries when we really raised the money for the all what we've been doing.
Who designed or how did you make this symbol that's on your letter, your stationery?
Well, that one there, is symbol there exactly were from an old Viking book that my wife had. She had the ship, but then I think there was a member in the league, and I can't say for sure who suggested that around there, I believe there was a Mr. Tom Grunning that suggested, made the motion that we should have Leif Erikson discover America year 1000. Mm-hmm. But that will show in the book you have. However, then lately when we have been getting the program printed by the Scandinavian Airlines System, I suggested that they put an airplane on a body ship going the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And Leif A. with SIS, I thought that was a great idea, and as such, they've been making our programs free now for years. So we use a few tricks like that for saving on our expenses. You know, you have to.
Now it says that you are incorporated. You are. Are you a business? Are you a business in yourself, unto yourselves?
We had to be incorporated, otherwise we had to pay a terrific tax on the money we collected.
Okay, so we'll turn the tape over and continue on the other side. This is a continuation of the Leif Erikson League tape recording. Okay, the officers of your group, then.
As you already have indicated that I am the president, Osbjørn Nordheim is the vice president, mm-hmm. Mrs. James Vorney is the secretary, mm-hmm. and Trygve Jørgensen is the treasurer. Commander Carl M. Moe is the historian. Then I think you also should know who is the organization right now. Today there is with us, and we tried to have it alphabetically here. Breiðar Blikk, Edvard Grieg Festival Committee, Icelandic Club of Greater Seattle, New Drottni Lodge number 12, Leif Eriksson Lodge number 1, Nordlandslaget, Normansforbundet, Nordmannslaget, Norwegian Commercial Club, Norwegian Hospital Association, Norwegian Ladies Corps, Norwegian Male Corps, Order of Runeberg, Oslo Lodge, Solveig Lodge number 40, Sunmarslaget, Swedish Club, Terjeviken Lodge, Valkyrian Lodge. Now, before we got any activities to get the statue, the stamp, or October 9th as a permanent day, it was only four organizations that belonged to the League. Mm-hmm. But as I already said, the Leif Eriksson League started in 1955. Mm-hmm. However, as I also have said, in the different names, they have operated since the later part of the 1800s. Mm-hmm. And they were satisfied with two or three organizations. But as the records also say, they didn't get anywhere. They didn't get anything facts done. And we ain't exactly too proud on what we have done, although we got more members joining us, either because it seems to me that to really get something established that will be lasting is to get the headquarters established. So that it can keep going. And with the place like Pacific Lutheran University here, with students from all over the country, when we came in, as a matter of fact, we met the girl from the southern part of the United States, I'm sure. When they find out and go back where they come from, say we should have a Liberian League and get some of your literature in your pamphlets and so on when they send it out, I think that'll help to keep it alive or maybe accomplish way more than we were able to do.
Do other leagues around the nation operate in the same way, where they have organizations sending delegates? Do you think most of the leagues operate
the same way that you do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, who at Pacific Lutheran University is, would you say, is there someone in charge of this operation or a spokesman for you?
Dr. Nesvik, I'm sure, is the one, together with the president of the university, mm-hmm. and others of the staff. I understand you have secretary also in the hall where you have most of the Leif Eriksson's books and things. That is very interested in keep it going. So with that help, I may say that I have heard of other organizations that try to get different universities or places to take over, but they let it drop.
Mm-hmm.
So here I feel this is a Scandinavian university, so I feel this is the best one we could think of.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do all we can, all we possible can to get the information as we have, as with books and things, as the Norwegian Commercial Club, the Bergson Arts and QAM have promised to donate.
Yes, and you are donating then the materials that you gather to the university, to your headquarters.
Right.
Are you gaining organizations in the Leif Eriksson League at the present time? Are you continuing to gain interest and support for your group in Seattle?
No, I won't exactly say we're gaining. It seems like when we got the commemorative stamp issued in Norway Center, and the reason we had it issued in Norway by the post office in Norway Center were that it felt that there was a Seattle branch that had brought it about. So they sent their postmaster general, they sent the senators, they sent several there for a big doing. At that time, there's 1,000 members that can come into the auditorium in Norway Center, but there were estimated there were 3,000 people that showed up.
Mm-hmm.
They were standing out in the hall, they were standing clear out on the sidewalk, and of course complained that they couldn't get in. But so when you have something special, then they flock in.
Yes.
You know, a human being isn't too far away from being sheep, you know. When When we give the sheep boots, they come running like everything. When we don't give them anything, they don't come. And the human being is a little the same. When you have something of interest, they show up. And you have asked that question 2-3 times, what we may do from now on for keep the interest going. That's a very good question. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what to say to do it except that there's the people that is interested in the heritage, in the facts of the world, have to take over, and if they can find any flaw in what we have done, there definitely is by pure mistake if it is, but I have double-checked everything very thoroughly, and as you see by the list of all these delegates we have here, they are pretty well educated people, all of them, and so far everything we have done so far to the league is supposed to be according to the history.
Yes. How often do you meet now?
When we raised the money for the statue, sometimes we met twice a week. When we started to write the letter for getting the Leif Erikson commemorative stamp accepted, we met once a month or twice a month. When we got to so far to get October 9th as a permanent day, it was once a month, and because you could phone and discuss, and after all you appoint committees to do different things, and to raise the money we had to have everybody, and that's why it was often we had meetings, and the rest of it were more in the line of writing letters and mm-hmm. to the proper parties in Washington D.C. and there were secretaries and the ones that really took real interest in the historical part of it came in, and we, as you see by the three things I mentioned, we made it, and now this little thing we are playing around with, this plates, it's more to get something into everybody's home mm-hmm. and put as a souvenir on the wall, and then we get the donation.
Yeah.
As a rule from that on a few dollars, and that help us to get stamps and keep the thing alive.
How do you distribute the plates that you're, are they sold in stores, or do they strictly go through the league? How are those distributed around? You say you like to get those into people's homes.
We have them in the Norway Center, we have them in the Swedish Club, and in some of the fisheries supply stores in Seattle, mm-hmm. and as a matter of fact, quite a few were shipped to someone in Portland and in Los Angeles, and they are then telling their friends about them, and people as a rule will say, oh, I want one. Mm-hmm. We have made a ruling we shouldn't accept a donation below $15 for it, mm-hmm. but the most we got isn't very much more than 15, I may say that.
What are your duties as president of the group?
To keep on holding everything together and look for new, better fields.
Mm-hmm. With,
yeah.
And this, and you have your secretary today, Emma Mehus-Savarni, and what are your duties as secretary?
Well, I write the letters that are necessary and just the general duties of a secretary.
Mm-hmm.
When we have meetings, I naturally take the minutes and read them at the next meeting and mm-hmm. keep track of what all the papers and everything that comes into the league. We always make copies of everything, and so that I have copies. Mr. Knockerud always has a copy. We always mm-hmm. make sure that the copies are in several places mm-hmm. so that they won't get lost again.
Mm-hmm.
But the general duties of a secretary, writing letters.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, is this a volunteer position for you? It's strictly voluntary?
Oh, very voluntary.
Yes. I'd like to go back and talk just a little bit more about the stamp. Now, when this stamp was issued, you had a big, big meeting, a big program in Seattle, and you, you had the governor, who was then Dan Evans, so you had Henry Jackson, Warren Magnuson, who was then a senator. What was the date of that program? It was in fact, Leif Erikson Day
October
in 1968, yeah. October 9th.
Yeah, we planned it that day.
Now, you told me a story a little earlier about this stamp and its value. Do you remember that? Would you
want to repeat
that story, please?
Well, yes, the stamp collections, and by the way, I said there was quite a few that came to Norway Center when the first day of the issue were. I found out, of course, right away that there were, what is the name on the stamp collectors? Do you have a special name? The stamp collectors, so we'll just get it.
Philatelist, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. I'll call them stamp collectors then.
Okay.
I like plain language anyway. So I would say one third of the people that got in and got seats were stamp collectors.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised, but our own people figured he could come about 5 or 10 minutes before the mm-hmm. program. And as such, that's why they were left out in the hall or out on the sidewalk. But we had the mic as we plugged in, so they heard what the speakers and so on said.
Yes.
It was very interesting.
Now, the stamp was issued at 6 cents.
Right.
In 1968. Now, you told me a story a little bit earlier about somebody who offered £50 for this in England. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, in London, when my wife's and children's trip to Norway, we were back there, and I were giving away some of these programs, as we had quite a few programs made, in spite of many people over there.
Mm-hmm.
We had got all of some extra ones, and I was giving them away. So a party that came from London told me, don't you know, he says, that they have a stamp collectors convention over in London. No, so I said, no, I didn't know that. And he said, this stamp that you were giving away, he says, were offered, one party offered £50 if he could get hold of one, and he did get hold of one. Did you send it? So I said, I don't know a thing about it. I don't know how they got there. But stamp collectors, of course, is like any other collectors. It doesn't necessarily mean it has the value.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because if you absolutely want it, you can give that. As I say, I have given a lot of them away, and you, Mrs. Borney, I imagine you have some, maybe you...
I have one.
You have it in your file, and now we have one couple here in...
Is this a valuable stamp today in the United States for stamp collectors? Is this a stamp that you suppose is traded back and forth as an expensive stamp?
On the top floor of Frederick & Nelson in Seattle, they have a stamp collectors sales office.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time I were up there, the 6 cents Leif Erikson stamp, I think they wanted 18 cents for.
Mm-hmm.
Just a stamp, but here is the program and all.
Mm-hmm.
That's what raised the value with the program. And with the stencil there on the whole thing, you see.
Yes.
That's glued right in there, and then the stencil it.
Do you know who designed the stamp, the Leif Erikson stamp?
Yes, we in the Leif Erikson League made the designs of the stamps and sent it to Washington, D.C. We got the letter back that we are not going to make a stamp. We are going to just have a cancellation stamp and put on the letter for this year.
Mm.
And we can't accept the signs as you sent. Naturally, we sent the design of Leif Erikson at Chilcha Bay Marina,
mm-hmm.
something in that line.
Mm-hmm.
So then we wrote several letters to the ones in power back east, and again requested if we couldn't have it with Leif Erikson on the stamp, and then we got the letter back that if that they were in favor of have the one that were shipped to the Leif Erikson statue that was shipped to Iceland.
Mm-hmm.
And if they accepted that, then they would go ahead. And naturally, of course, we accepted it. And I believe the first printing we made 22 million, and then they had two or three more printings of it, so there was quite a few made. But I happened to buy a book of it and still have it,
mm-hmm.
and quite a few people bought the book of it, of Scandinavians. And
now, the stamp shows a statue of Leif Erikson, and you say this statue is in Iceland?
Yeah, the original and the replica of it is in Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And you may say that the replica of this statue again is in C.L. Danes, a terrific much difference, you know. On his left side, he has the sword.
Mm-hmm.
On his right, in his right hand, he carry an axe. We eliminated the cape on the statue here in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you eliminate the cape of this one here, you have exactly the one as we have in Seattle.
So basically, it's the same statue.
Yeah. Well, it's supposed to be the same person, so they couldn't make it very much difference.
How do you suppose this is just somebody's idea of how Leif Erikson looked? Is this authentic, do you know?
Well, that is a rather interesting point. When we got so far that they were going to accept with the art commission, you know, each city have an art commission, or they should have.
Mm-hmm.
And when they got that far in the city of Seattle, in Nashville were several that want to get the job of making the statue.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked my league members to come with me up to them hearings. However, it was in the middle of the day. The young ones didn't want to take off from work.
Mm-hmm.
The old ones, they thought it would be too exciting for their art, so they didn't show up. So I usually wore that alone. And we had several meetings up there then. I don't exactly care to go into and mention the names of it, but one brought you want a name, do you?
Just tell us what their ideas
were. One came, a good artist, by the way, came with a beautiful arrangement, and I would say they were about 6x6, or maybe bigger than that. And he put it on the wall, and he pointed out, he said, this will be our idea of what should be a Leif Erikson statue.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting together with Henry Broderick in Seattle, real estate representative of the city of Seattle, big owner. And we were whispering and talking a little bit, but not loud, very careful. And the one that had made what he called a beautiful setup of the Leif Erikson arrangement, he says it looked like the fundraiser of the Leif Erikson statue is not interested in my sketch here. He said, Mr. Nockridge, he said, this is our viewpoint of what Leif Erikson should look like. Oh, I'm awful sorry, I said, I thought you were showing an octopus. Because there were several heads, several legs, several, you know, and later on that statue were picked up and put in the library in the city of Seattle, and now it's called the Coffee Rush.
The what?
The Coffee Rush.
Hmm.
Last time I was in the library, I saw it standing there, and it said the Coffee Rush, and that's very appropriate for it. I maybe went a little too far calling it an octopus, but in your records here, as I turn in, you have the copy of that
design.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then, the gentleman that had made, he must have put a lot of work in on you making that fancy, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So he ruled it up, and although he was one of the top members of the art commission, he ruled it together, and he said, gentlemen, I am leaving. So he walked out, disgusted. Well, then they started to ask me about the statues or what we taught. So I had the book, as my wife brought from our country, asked about where we learned all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in her school, we even had a special book where the Leif Erikson sketches of the way the old time taught
book?
History book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I had that along, and I had some other sketches. One that was made by a Mr. Schesmo, an artist that make water fountains and things in the city of Seattle. And I said, well, now here, I said, we have some sketches of what I think the Vikings looked like.
Mm-hmm.
So one professor on art commission spoke up, and he says, after all, with our education study, he says to me, I think we should have something to say about the making of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I said, you may, if you ask us Scandinavian, how the Vikings and them people were dressed, but you don't know that unless you get it from us.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, why not get the Scandinavian to make the statue? And indirectly, due to that statement and so on, part of it named August Werner took on and wanted to make it, but it was Jan Eng and myself and then the four actually worked on making the model, the 4 foot model. Then they were shipped down to Berkeley, and in Berkeley, Francis Vanello, an Italian 22-year-old young boy,
mm-hmm.
made the bronze casting. Spero Angores, a Greek, had made the enlarged plaster Paris statue mm-hmm. of what we sent down. And Martin Hagfors and myself, we went on and picked it up and helped to finish it up and brought it up here.
So in Chilshaw Bay, how tall is the statue up there?
16 foot, the statue, but then it stands on a 12 foot base,
uh-huh.
12 to 14 foot base.
Yeah.
And around on the base, it's Norwegian granite imported from Norway,
mm-hmm.
close to Oslo.
Yeah.
Askim, Stenhugre, in Norway. And they claimed it's gold in that,
that
granite. You can see a small sparkles, but if it's gold or what it is, so far nobody been chipping it out. I don't think there's enough to chip it out.
Are you making plans for this next October 9th yet?
Oh yes, we're going to have a big celebration this year, and together with the Norwegian Commercial Club.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have that on their day, October 8th,
mm-hmm.
and then on the 9th to continue the celebration. Mm-hmm. So there'll be 2 day celebration this year.
What do you have planned? Just
well, have a good speaker, and I may tell you that we wrote a letter to Senator Warren Magnuson, being he's not the senator anymore back in Washington. We thought he'll be here, but he have difficulty finding an apartment
mm-hmm.
Here in the Northwest, and to maybe get rid of what he had back east, and due to certain things, he wasn't sure if he could accept. So
mm-hmm.
if we get the definite word that he do not accept, we'll have to write to others.
Mm-hmm.
However, with the commercial club, there would be a good dinner and so on in connection with it.
Yeah. These are, you say Norwegians who are business people? Is that what the commercial club is?
Yes, it's your business, ex-boat, fishing boat owners,
mm-hmm.
boat captains, skippers, maritime people, contractors of all descriptions.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to add about the Leif Erikson League? Have you taken, I just might ask one more question, have you taken news of your activities back to Norway, and how have the Norwegian people reacted to your activities?
The Norwegian people today are very interested in getting the plates. That surprised me. But as far as in the celebration for October 9th and Leif Erikson, it isn't really enough of it. And if you don't mind, I stretch another little story about it. One trip I was back, when I was back there, I was asked about it, and this is years ago. My dad was still alive, and he said, well, he said, you know, he said, we can't do too much about Leif Erikson in this country because we fish codfish. We dry it, we ship it to Spain and Italy. They're our biggest source of market for the codfish. And he says, they believe in Columbus. And he says, from them, when we send the codfish, we buy wine from them. So we can't spoil our trade. And he said, I think that'd be the main reason that the Norwegians is kind of careful about pressing too hard about Leif Erikson. But we all know that is the fact that Leif Erikson were among the first white people that got the settlement started in the United States today. So that's their viewpoint. And when I was back there last year, I stopped at the little newspaper, and the secretary, as I interviewed me there, she says, Nokerud så forferdelig. You understand Norwegian?
Why don't you read a little bit in Norwegian and then translate
I'll translate. Nokerud så forferdelig på meg når jeg innrømmet at jeg ikke forbinder den datum oktober 9. Det med noen ting. Nokerud sier, det jo Leif Eriksen dag. Nei, det nordmenn sannelig ikke flinke til å lære deres egen historie. Now in English that'll be Nokerud looked at me rather surprising as I admitted as a secretary that I couldn't connect October the 9th with any special thing. Then he says, that is Leif Eriksen Day. Yes, I have to say that you here in Norway are really good to not learn your own history. They kind of a twisted way of saying it, but that's the way she put it down in the newspaper.
Well, that's probably a good place for us to end the interview then. Thank you, Mr. Nokerud.